From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 30th day of October, 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, and we'll hear the latest from USDA as it relates to hemp production and regulations that were released yesterday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group. December corn today up 4.5 cents in Chicago at $3.90¾. The March at $3.99½. 3.5 higher in the May at $4.05 at a quarter up 2.5 cents. July 4.10½ up a penny and 3/4. And December at $4.06¾ up 0.5 cent. November beans down 2¼ today. $9.16 the settlement price. January at $9.30½ down 3. March 2¾ lower at $9.43½. And the May at $9.55 down 2¾. July soybeans 965 at a quarter, 3 lower in November of next year at 968.5, down 2.5 cents. The bean oil down 2 cents. The bean meal up 80, or rather down 80 cents for the day. July soft red winter wheat at 524.5, 2¾ lower. July hard red down 2 at 447¾ of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago, October, 113.37½, 2.5 cents higher for the day. December at 118.30, up $1.47½. October feeders at 146, 2.5 cents higher. Lean hogs at $65.77½, $1.45 higher for the afternoon. The crude oil down 49 cents. Ethanol 3 6/10 lower. Heating oil down 4 2/10, and that's diesel fuel. Gasoline a penny and 0.9 cents lower. The Federal Reserve today lowered the interest rate by 0.25 cent. That probably will make the market happy, but may not be enough for President Donald J. Trump, who was hoping to have that interest rate drop to 0% at some point in time. Now let's turn our attention to what did happen in the marketplace. Jackie Vakes is here. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
Let's start in the normal area. Go through support resistance, manage money, and export inspections for me.
Okay. Well, we'll start with December corn. We've got support at 361, 313, and 287. Resistance, 391, 415, and 439. March corn, support, 395, 370, and 324. Resistance is at $4, $4.11, and $4.25. And you look at beans, January beans support is at 931, 881, 820. And resistance, 937, 948, and 960. They're continuing to trade above the downtrend line, so that's good news. March beans support 921, 904, and 886. And resistance at 943, 979, and 1008. I manage money this week. I love watching these guys because it's very interesting to see how it moves. They are right now net short 9,000 contracts on soft red wheat compared to 18,000 last week. So they've lifted some of those shorts. On corn, they are 81,000 short compared to 113,000 last week. Beans, they're 53,000 long compared to 36 last week. And when you look at soy meal, 25,000 short compared to 31,000 last week. And on soy oil, they're long 70,000 compared to 37,000 last week. Now, this could all be a function. That's why a person has to keep watching it. This could be a function of the end of the month coming, you know, and that they are reversing positions and taking some profits off. But we'll have to watch that as we go forward. When we look at export inspections, Todd, wheat exports are running 23% ahead of last year. They were only 13% last week. Corn, 60% behind last year, 62% last week, so that's an improvement. And beans, 9% ahead of a year ago, and that's up from 6% last week. So, you know, some good things going on, just slowly cranking away. And when we look at China on export inspections, I always look at the destinations. China actually took 202,000 metric tons out of the Gulf, first time we've seen them in the Gulf in a long, long time, and almost 334,000 tons of beans out of the Pacific Northwest. So some pretty good stuff going on.
Do you have any speculation as to why they came out of the Gulf? I was thinking maybe that snowfall that prevented soybeans from being harvested in the Dakotas may have caused the PNW not to be able to pick up enough soybeans to export out. I could very well be wrong.
No, I think that's the first thing I thought of, you know, is that they're just making sure, you know, that they've got access. It'll be interesting to see if there is any big fall off up there. I mean, Crop Progress showed they're still making progress, so who knows? We don't. But, yeah, it's the first time we've seen them in the Gulf. So it's a good thing. Let's just put it that way.
Have you been thinking about what's ahead for the U.S. farmer?
Well, the Missouri River right now is in its 7th month of flooding, and they think that it's going to go on probably into the winter, and that you're going to have some homes and some buildings along that river that are going to be encased in ice, which is really a terrible thought. The rivers are high because there's such saturated ground, and they've got quite a lot of broken levees. And on top of that, at this time of the year, the Army Corps of Engineers is releasing water upstream to get prepared for next spring's rains. Now, you look, now we're talking flooding, right? So let's look at the James River up in North Dakota. They say that may not drop below the flood level at all. And, you know, if they get snow, it's going to be, oh, no, this is not a good thing. You know, and so ultimately, it's going to be the guys that they're going to be the most heavily affected are river bottoms and that type of thing. It all comes downstream. We know that. And a few other things that are going on. We saw that the USDA came out and said they're going to have regulations to help hemp farmers, you know, because hemp is being legalized in many states. I think it'll be in probably in almost all states eventually because of the CBD demand, oil demand. And they want the regulations in there, and the farmer does too, to protect them from getting charged for having a drug that's bad hemp. I still shake my head. Interesting that, you know, they're saying, well, this is a great alternative for farmers, but, you know, it's similar to some of the other industries we've seen, like ethanol. You have to get in early or you're not going to get to take part in the big premiums that are there. So on the long term, Todd, you know, I've been fairly bearish corn for a long time, and I'm turning more bullish, but this is in the long term. So you guys out there listening, don't jump because of anything. But the reason I'm looking at this is because I look for the potential of the investment that we used to really enjoy here from the Dow Jones. It may come back. You know, when the Dow can't perform, when you start getting to 27, 28,000, it gets tougher and tougher to get the good returns that you'd like to get. And so what they'll do then is they'll come over into a depressed market like we've had over here, and they will hedge their portfolio. And that gives us a boost. And I think I can see that probably coming down the road sometime this next year.
Hey, for the past 2 or 3 weeks, you've been talking about the potential things that might happen in the Argentine election and what would take place if the Peronists were put into office. And on Sunday, that actually came to fruition.
Oh, it did. You know, the Fernandez-Kirchner ticket won with over 45% of the vote. So in Brazil, if they each person doesn't have at least 45%, then they have a runoff. But they won't have that this time, and he'll be taking over on December 10th. Now, this is the interesting part. Alberto Fernandez is a law professor, and he's never held public office. His vice president is Cristina Kirchner, and she was the president of Argentina from 2007 to 2015, and her husband was from 2003 to 2007. At this time, she still faces 11 counts of graft from while she was in office. She hasn't been prosecuted. And, you know, the sad part is that, you know, the farmer, unless they can get into the city, you know, it's not gonna fly. You're not going to get the vote the way you should. And at the moment, they've got an inflation rate of over 50%, which I know a lot of people say, 50%? Are you kidding me? Well, that's not the worst. Their interest rates are above 80% right now. So we here in the U.S. should be kissing the ground. The Argentine peso has lost 85% of its value. And so, you know, that is very, very concerning because Cristina Kirchner. So basically what it appears, on the surface. We'll see once if Alberto has any guts or not, is that Cristina's going to use him as a puppet. And so when she was in office, she just taxed the world out of exports. In fact, at one point in time, corn export tax and bean export tax accounted for 11 to 12% of the total government income. And so her coming back into Argentina is not good news for the ag sector at all, you know, and especially if they're going to follow that same path as last time, just higher and higher export taxes. You know, when you looked at Kirchner, corn was most heavily taxed and corn acreage just fell apart. And so over the last number of years now, you know, it's been coming back. So I think when you look at the bigger picture, and this is where it comes in that it's probably very good for us and not good for other people, is that corn and beans are priced in U.S. dollars. And so this is one asset that is not depreciating. And that's why Christina Kirchner has the attitude she has. She says farmers are too rich. They have too much because they have these U.S. dollar commodities. And that's why she wants to take it. And I saw a blurb about Vietnam. You know, a lot of the businesses since the tariff thing has been going on have been fleeing to Vietnam from China. And now, but Vietnam is Argentina's biggest customer for corn. And already this year, now, you know, how we talked about front loading, Todd, last year and the year before on beans, last year on corn, they've already taken 5.1 million metric tons in contrast to 600,000 metric tons for all of 2018. It was an 850% increase. They've already bought that. And they get 90% of their soy meal from Argentina. So, you know, they said our meal's too expensive and our corn price is too high and our quality is not good enough because of the fact that, you know, we run on a 56 per test weight and South American corn runs on a 60 pound test weight. And so this is far reaching what's going on at this point in time and could have benefits for us, you know, as far as bringing business back to us.
Let's stay in South America, maybe visit a couple of other countries.
Yeah.
Brazil and Chile this week as well has an impact on ag.
Oh, and Chile, yes, it certainly does, doesn't it? When you look at Brazil, I don't have a lot to say other than that they're planting in all areas now. They're definitely behind in some areas, but they've had rainfall. So that is a great thing. When you talk about Chile, of course, that's where the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperative meeting was supposed to be the middle of this next month, but it's been canceled because they said there's just too much protesting going on. You got to wonder about that, you know. But the White House here is still saying they're looking to finalize phase one agreement, in that same time frame, which was November 11th to November 17th. So let's hope so. Everything I read says to me that there's just more and more, China is more and more leaning toward getting something done. You know, this is not something they can buy their way out of. A trade war is an entirely different situation than having a currency issue. And so I look forward to seeing what happens.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vake. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Well, the U.S. Department of Agriculture yesterday officially announced the establishment of the Domestic Hemp Production Program. The program is designed to create a consistent regulatory framework involving hemp production across the country. USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Greg Ibaugh, says the agency will work with states and tribes to help producers establish federally approved hemp production plans, as long as hemp production is not outlawed by their states.
We will work with states and Indian tribes to establish approval of their federal plans, and we will also work with producers in states or tribes that do not have a USDA-approved plan, as long as the production of hemp is not prohibited in those states. With the publication of the interim final rule, states and Indian tribes may not prohibit the interstate transportation or shipment of hemp lawfully produced under an approved state or tribal plan, a USDA-issued license, or the 2014 Farm Bill. The interim final rule is effective upon publication in the Federal Register.
The interim rule also calls for a public comment period, so USDA can take input on the final rule before it's enacted. Eyeball says the 2020 growing season will be a test drive, so USDA can make any needed corrections before publishing the final rule.
Some of the key provisions of the interim final rule include provisions and procedures for tracking the land where hemp is grown, procedures for testing for the concentration levels of THC, procedures for disposing of non-compliant plants, compliance provisions on how to handle violations as a result of inspections on farms, procedures to share information with law enforcement. We also are going to assure that states and tribes that have programs have resources available to manage those plans.
There will be a 30-day waiting period for USDA to license farmers who want to grow hemp in states or tribes that don't submit plans for federal approval. Eyeball says they've gotten a lot of questions during the development process surrounding hemp testing for THC.
We're going to require testing to be done in a DEA-registered laboratory. Sampling must be conducted within 15 days prior to anticipated harvest by a USDA-approved sampling agent or a federal, state, or law enforcement agent that is local that will collect samples from the flower material.
USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Bill Northey says once state and tribal plans are in place, hemp growers will be eligible for various government programs in 2020.
This rule enables USDA's Farm Service Agency, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Risk Management Agency to determine for farmers who want to grow hemp their eligibility for various USDA programs, including loans, crop insurance, disaster assistance, and conservation programs. All these programs will be starting for hemp in 2020 crop year. Generally, if hemp producers are in states or in tribal agreements with a USDA plan, are operating directly under USDA authority, or this next year operating under the current 2014 Farm Bill Hemp Pilot Program, they will be able to participate in USDA conservation programs.
More information can be found at USDA's farmers.gov website. Look for farmers.gov/hemp. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Thank you. I'm glad that everyone's out there putting up with the cold.
Well, yeah, there is cold. It rained here this morning, though I'm pretty certain there was a lot of snow across the Corn Belt. Where's that falling?
Well, most of it is really not underway quite yet. It's going to occur later today and into the night tonight. We'll see a band of it occurring from parts of northern Missouri and southeastern Iowa into Illinois and eventually into western portions of Michigan. We'll see 2 to 6 inches, maybe. A couple of spots may get upwards to 8 inches, possibly. That's a bit of a reach, but it's possible. In the meantime, as of now, most of the snow has been out in the Central Plains, Colorado and Kansas, maybe a few neighboring areas there in Nebraska. But as we go forward through the afternoon, we'll see that change. And everybody else in the Midwest to the east and south of this region I just described will see cool rain throughout the next 24 hours, maybe a few strong thunderstorms and some locally heavy amounts of moisture in parts of Tennessee and eastern Kentucky.
Is this enough precipitation to keep producers out of the field, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know that, a lot of these areas are getting the rain here today and tomorrow are the same areas that were impacted by that tropical storm Olga and the frontal system that occurred over last weekend. And the ground has certainly not had any opportunity to dry down since then. So this is adding more insult to that injury. And as we go forward into the coming week, that's the coolness that's going to be a problem because the temperatures are going to be low enough that evaporation rates will be held back. So a big improvement in topsoil moisture so far, so harvesting can resume, is going to be really difficult to achieve for a while. We'll go about a week without precipitation, but there is another storm system on the charts coming up for the end of next week. I think it's the 7th and 8th. That's a long ways out in time, but in an environment like this, it's going to be difficult to get the ground to dry down ideally, so it's still going to be a struggle.
Farmers will say we need it to freeze in that case so that we can support the heavy equipment on these fields.
Yeah, that's correct. And unfortunately, we are going to see some freezes, but I think we'll thaw out very quickly during the course of the day. It's not going to be nearly as cold in the heart of the Midwest as it is in the plains. Temperatures this morning were below zero in Montana, and in the single digits and teens out across parts of western Kansas and Colorado. So there's some really impressive cold out there, but it is not expected to make it into the Midwest in such a manner that we can accomplish what you were just describing. We really need it to be colder still, and I don't think anybody's quite ready for that. We got a lot of wheat still to put into the ground and get established, so it's a little soon for us to wish for the winter dormancy quite yet.
Speaking of farmers wanting to get into the field, what's happening in South America?
There is still some concern about southwestern portions of Brazil's crop country. That includes the state of Mato Grosso do Sul and neighboring areas of Paraná and Paraguay, as well as Bolivia, for that matter. All of these areas are seeing a good long stretch here of dry weather. Now, it rained last week in some of these areas, so planting has likely become rather aggressive, but we're not expecting to see rain for another 5 days, at least in these areas, and it will be very warm to hot, and so the ground's going to dry fairly quickly. That puts a lot of pressure down on the prospects for rain next week. It does look like it will rain in some of these areas. We're not convinced how significant that will be, and so we'll all be watching very closely. If for some reason the rain turns out to be a bust, there will be a lot more concern about Brazil crop development as we move on into November by the time we get into the first part of next week. So we'll be watching real closely. Northeastern Brazil, by the way, is not likely to see any rain of significance for a good couple of weeks here, at least. The Northeast produces about 10% of their soybean crop.
Is a lack of rainfall a common theme across the southern hemisphere?
Well, it does seem to be lacking in many ways. South Africa is dry. Australia, of course, is in a multi-year drought. And even southwestern Argentina is lacking on precipitation. So, yes, that's a very good question, and definitely that is the case. It is raining, though, right now in parts of Australia, at the eastern part of the country there, and there's going to be a follow-up system coming up here Friday through Monday. It'll be the best rain that Queensland and New South Wales have seen since last April, and it will help to improve topsoil moisture, but there's no follow-up precipitation, and a lot of the dry land producers there that like to plant cotton and sorghum will most likely choose not to put any seed in the ground because of this event, at least not until the Australian Bureau of Meteorology starts trying to convince them that there is a change in the pattern in the long-term outlook. And I have to admit, it does not look good right now that there's going to be any long-term change there.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Find us, listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications, including on iTunes, in the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, even Spotify. Wherever you look, you can probably find the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, including in the NPR One application. I'm Illinois Extension. Todd Gleason.